My next guest has been a frequent guest on my radio show and a lifelong hero of mine. His name is James Randi. You may know him as the Amazing Randi. He spent a long career, he's had multiple careers, first as a magician, then as an escape artist, then as a radio host of his own show for several years in the 60s. But for many, many years, he's been known as one of the leaders of the skeptic community because he saw people doing things, making claims of paranormal abilities or supernatural things, and knew what they were saying was a lie, and yet gullible people were buying it and in many cases being hurt by it. And so he has fought against that sort of stuff as his latest career, which has lasted, well, probably for the last 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. Next month, the James Randi Educational Foundation will be having its annual Amazing Meeting in Las Vegas. I have been to about a dozen of the 13 or 14 of these that there have been, and always had a great time listening to the speakers there and visiting with Randi. There's also a new documentary out about his life. It's called An Honest Liar, and it is available now on iTunes and the Google Play Store, and is hitting theaters across the country this week as well. I'm so happy to welcome him back to the show. James Randi, it's always a pleasure.
Hello, Paul. You're sounding a little faint in the background, perhaps because it's so far away from Fort Lauderdale, you see.
that must be it. You know, you and I have talked many, many times on the radio and over meals, but there are a few questions I've never asked you, and I'd like to start with some of those today, if we could.
Oh, of course, of course.
Tell me about the first time you saw a magician perform and sat there and looked up and said, I want to do that.
Well, I think you know this story from years past, Paul. We have spent a lot of time together over a lot of cups of coffee and various assorted goodies. I recall those meetings with great pleasure, of course. But that was, I think, an interesting story. I was, I was one of those child prodigy things, a very unhappy part of my life, incidentally. Because I had no peer group. I was allowed in Toronto, Canada, where I was born and almost raised. I was allowed to stay out of grade school, essentially. I could do what I wanted to. All I had to do was go in and perform the examinations and tests that came up along the course of the year. And that gave me a chance to wander around Toronto, and I had a special truancy pass, in my pocket, a little beige card, which I had up until a few years ago, Paul. Can you imagine?
Wow.
I lost the thing someplace or other. It's down behind a molding in the room someplace. I don't know. But whatever the story, that was something that I really valued, because a truant officer would stop me on the street during school hours, you see, and I would just wave the pass at him, and he had to let me go. So there, that was my first escape act.
Nice.
And I must say that I did take advantage of the fact that for 12 cents in those days, that's Canadian cents, of course,
yep,
you could get into the Casino Theater on Queen Street in Toronto, and I took the advantage of doing that on a Wednesday afternoon matinee, and I saw the great Harry Blackstone. I'm speaking now of the Father Blackstone. There were two Harry Blackstones, father and son, no longer with us, either one of them, unfortunately. But that was the old man Blackstone, and he sort of took me under his wing. He took me backstage, because I went around to the back of the theater, and I wanted to know more about what I had just seen in the performance. He took me backstage, took me to the dressing room, gave me a poster of his, wow, and stuff like that, and taught me a very simple trick, which I still do to this very day, because I don't have much of a repertoire, you see. And, it was a great pleasure. Harry Blackstone Sr., from then on, every year, our family would get four tickets, and those four tickets would take us to the Casino Theater, and we could go and see Harry Blackstone. And so I revere the memory of old Harry. I miss him greatly, of course, and his son as well. And so that was my first start into magic, because I saw Harry actually do the Azra levitation.
What's that?
The Azra levitation is, well, out of this world, let's say. It's a wonderful levitation where the young lady comes out on stage, and as she becomes rigid, falls into the arms of the assistants, is laid upon a couch, and then the magician stands there with sonorous music going in the background, and she rises straight up into the air in a prone position, and then back down again, after having hoops passed around her body, of course, to make sure that they where there were no wires or supports.
Oh, there couldn't be any supports.
Of course not. We know that, don't we, Bob?
Right. We saw it with our own eyes.
Could you see me winking?
Okay, so you go and you see him and you get the poster, and you don't have the truancy pass anymore, but do you still have the poster?
You know the answer to that. I left the damn thing on the bus on the way home, and someplace in Toronto, Canada, I think there's an old rickety bus still moving around on its route. And in the back window, there will be a rolled-up poster with my name on it.
Now, having seen him and having experienced that, was that the moment where you decided that was the direction you wanted to go with your life, to be an illusionist?
Yes, at that very moment, either archaeology or chemistry, one or the other, because those were both of my interests at that time. I was very interested, very much interested in archaeology, still am. And those professions lost me, and I don't know whether that's to their advantage or not, it perhaps is. The magic industry, if it is an industry in itself, but showbiz, let's put it that way, showbiz did gain me, and again, I don't know whether that's to their advantage or not.
Now, you started doing magic at an early age, and you were doing it for a few years, and then started doing what's known as a mentalism act, where, you know, you'll pretend, and pretend is an important word to remember here when anytime you're seeing a magician, because it ain't real, folks. It's important to know that when you're doing a mentalism act, part of what you're doing is pretending to plant a seed of an idea in somebody's mind, or read what their ideas are, or draw something that you sucked out of their brain and put down on paper. As a performer, you made those sound a lot more more magical than I just did. But I know that
for you, Paul, that was a little awkward.
That was a little awkward. Someday I'm going to learn how to speak for a living. I haven't got it down quite yet. But here's one thing I want to lead to. When you were doing the mentalism act, didn't you have somebody come backstage to you once who claimed that you weren't just pretending, that you actually had the ability to do what you had claimed to be doing on stage?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but even to this very day, when I do my lectures, and I do them all over the world now, when I do that, I always throw in some mentalism just to demonstrate to my audience, though it's a lecture audience in most cases, that they can be fooled by a stunt in mentalism. I'm still pretty slick in that respect,
yep.
I must say. And I will get people who come backstage to chat with me, and they'll say, oh, I liked when you did this, that, and the other thing, but when you told the lady her phone number and you had never met her before, that was real, right? That was ESP. And I'd say, oh, no, that's a mentalism trick. And they look at you, and they, in many cases, they'll just turn and walk away because they think I'm lying to them. And they'll look back over their shoulder and say, I know the difference between a trick and reality, Mr. Randy. Well, no, they don't. That's the problem, of course.
Yeah, and if you're a gifted and talented magician, as you have been, that's the idea, to make them think that it's reality, but that's just their perception, and it is just a trick. And in fact, what was the name of the senator who argued with you over this? A United States senator?
Claiborne Pell.
Who was so convinced that what you're doing was real that they made the claim that he made the claim, maybe you don't know that you're psychic, but you are.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That happened. I was receiving an award of some kind from some speaker's organization. I was in Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact. And a couple of Secret Service men showed up. I'm getting to recognize Secret Service men now. They always scowl at me and scowl at everybody, I believe.
Yeah.
And so these two fellas entered the room and looked around, and then they escorted Claiborne Pell in. He was very frail. He was quite old at that time, even. I didn't recognize Claiborne Pell at all. And the Secret Service man introduced him. And I was quite surprised to have a visitor from him. And so he actually took a pad of paper out of his pocket, a little notebook, and he scribbled something on it, folded it up, put it under his foot on the floor, and said, tell me what's on that piece of paper. Uri Geller did that for me, and he did it real. Now you see if you can cheat me. And so I looked over. As a matter of fact, Harry Blackstone Jr. was standing in that room with me. He was receiving an award, too, on the same program. And he sort of smiled and smirked and then turned away because he saw what I saw. But come to that in just a moment. So anyway, Claiborne Pell put his foot on the piece of paper and said, if you can tell me what's on that, then you're the real thing. And he was looking very satisfied with himself. So I took a piece of paper, and I scribbled something on it, and I put it underneath my foot. And he took his foot off the piece of paper and showed me a simple equilateral triangle. Now, I think that was done, Paul, because he wanted to show that the simplest shape in the world, it could have been a circle, too, of course, a very simple shape. He wanted to show that I was buffaloed by one of the simplest shapes that you can make geometrically.
Yep.
And when he turned over my piece of paper on the floor, he saw it was identical in size and shape and everything, of course, because an equilateral triangle is a pretty simple shape.
Yep.
And he started to hyperventilate, and the Secret Service guys came forward, and they grabbed him by the arms because he looked like he was going to fall over. And he pointed at me as they led him out of the room, and he yelled at me. He said, that was real. That was not a trick. Because he couldn't tell the difference. And if a magician or a mentalist performs well, you can't tell the difference.
Right.
Difference.
That's the idea. That's what makes it a good trick. If it's not a good trick and you can tell, then the magician wasn't doing his or her job.
Exactly correct.
Which leads me to a question I've meant to ask you for a long, long time. As you know, I've admired your work ever since the days I saw you on Wonderama as a kid, and then on the years on The Carson Show. And
I spent that money already.
I'm not asking for the money.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I've been a contributor to the JREF and attendee at TAM and many, many years, and a supporter of yours. But I've got to ask you, and I don't want to have to invoke a word that Penn and Teller used as the title of their Showtime series. Let's just call it BS.
Okay.
It seems to me like the world is as full of, or maybe more full of BS than it ever was. And I'm wondering, in a world where homeopathic remedies are still sold at CVS and Walgreens, where psychics can still be found in nearly every strip mall in America, where faith healers are still conning people, where we have anti-vaxxers and others who don't believe science, you can extend that to even climate change. Are you frustrated as the country and maybe even the world has become less evidence-based?
Well, yes, to a certain extent, Paul, I am. But I must tell you one thing as well. I'm accompanying the movie Alice Liar whenever I can. I get summons to go off to some exotic place in the United States like Kentucky. You know, my life is pretty exciting, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I will go there, and I will sit and look through another showing of An Honest Liar, and then the Q&A period afterwards. I often get people who come to me, Paul, with tears in their eyes, and they grab me by the hand and say, Mr. Randy, you made a big change in my life. Now, Paul, you can't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you have to earn. And when I hear people say that, I realize to myself, wow, I guess I'm getting through. Somehow, somewhere, at least with these folks, I am getting through. That is the reward of my life right there, to know that somebody has changed their mind about the woo-woo stuff out there due to either my books or my declarations from the lecture platform or whatever. That is a big reward. That is the reward to me, aside from the money. The money's nice as well. That supports me, but the fact that people will come to me with that kind of expression, and it gives you pause. It certainly, to me, it makes me think, wow, I guess I just ought to continue on as long as I possibly can. This is important work.
It's been very important work, and if you fought back the lack of reason that seems to take over so much of the world on a regular basis, if you fought it back one person at a time, then you've done a great thing. And as I've told you, being at the Amazing Meeting and seeing it grow from just 100 people or 200 people at the beginning to 1,600 people filling up a ballroom in Las Vegas, knowing that there are others there, many of whom are there for the first time, who are also realizing, oh, there are people like me who don't believe nonsense. That really fills you up with joy, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. It does, I must say. It rather cows me in a way, because I realize, gee, I'm 86 now, you know? Haven't got that long to go. I'm only going to live to be 110 or so, I'm sure.
Right.
But I've got to keep working. I've got a desk here in front of me, sitting at this desk right now with piles of paper all over it. The computer's on. I'm on Skype. I'm busy, 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 and I don't want to have one day in my life go by when I'm not busy, because I think the work I'm doing is important, and the work that the James Randi Educational Foundation has done over all these years is very important.
Well, if I could impose on you to stand by, I've got to take a commercial break, and then I want to come back and talk a little bit more about the documentary and the Amazing Meeting. Can you hold on?
Certainly.
James Randi, online at the James Randi Educational Foundation, randi.org, or go to amazingmeeting.com to find out about the get-together that we will both be part of in Las Vegas in just a few short weeks. This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Talking with James Randi, the Amazing Randi, whose Amazing Meeting will take place next month. It'll actually be a celebration of a reasoned life, that life being Randi's, because at age 86, I guess, Randi, you've decided that even though you've traveled the world and spoken everywhere, it's just gotten to be a little bit too much. Is that why this will be your last TAM?
I'm not too sure about that. Perhaps if I find myself in the vicinity of Las Vegas at the right time of the year, I may just drop by, knock on the door. But no, I've got to cut down on a lot of my travel, Paul, because I'm just not as firm as I used to be, you know?
I understand.
I've led a rather athletic life and everything. I'm in good shape for a guy 86, certainly. Right. I'm still going up and downstairs.
Yep.
As many times as I can. I think I'm just cutting down on a lot of the travel stuff, because it's rather difficult. You know, the time zone changes and things like that are a little harder to take.
And the days are kind of long there at the Amazing Meeting, because they're filled up with so much remarkable stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of remarkable stuff, let's talk a little bit about this documentary, which, as I mentioned, is available now on iTunes and Google Play, and is hitting theaters across the country as well after playing in multiple festivals and getting multiple awards. It's called An Honest Liar, and it's a look back at your life done by Tyler Meesom and Justin Weinstein, who I know traveled with you and followed you around. And having never been the subject of a biographical documentary like this, first I got to know, what's it like to have these two guys with you all the time?
Oh, well, they weren't with me all the time. I got to turn in and sleep some of the nights, you know.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, they were sort of out of the way. They were very, very careful not to interfere with my life too much. But they were there, and they did, I think, a wonderful job of it. I'm certainly very satisfied with the film. There were some rough spots in it, and rough times and such, but I did very well with it. I really liked the job. My partner, Davey Pena, and myself are very pleased with the results. And we're celebrating the fact that the film has been such a great success all over the country, and as a matter of fact, around the world.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear the response. It's funny, because I've known you for so long, I know some of the stories that are in there, although I didn't know all of them, but I know a lot of stories that are not in the movie, and I can't help but wonder how many more hours, because the movie's only 90 minutes or so, how many more hours of stuff could they have put in if they wanted to be comprehensive about your amazing career?
Well, we sort of figured we could have done two more movies, but one at a time, I always say. And by the way, Paul, I must, before I forget, and we are running out of time, aren't we all?
Yes.
You mentioned something that really got my attention. I just made a note on the pad in front of front of me here on the desk that we should talk about, I think. That's the anti-vaxxers.
Yep.
I am very concerned with this, Paul, because, Louis Pasteur came up with a grand idea, as you probably know, and so many other scientists in the medicine business, they came up with a wonderful idea. It's called vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And vaccination works. It works beautifully, not perfectly. No, none of these things work perfectly, but they work very, very well. Millions, literally millions of lives of people all over this blue planet have been saved by vaccination. And for these semi-celebrities out there, part-time actors and whatnot, who will come up on TV and say, oh no, it causes autism, it poisons people and such, the Penn and Teller term, the BS term, that serves to describe that perfectly, I think.
Yeah, Andrew Wakefield is one of history's great villains,
yes,
as far as I'm concerned, because he's the guy who faked the study that linked autism to vaccines, faked being the operative word there. There is no actual connection. And it drives me crazy, and I talk about it and write about it myself on a regular basis. In fact, I was distressed this morning to see that in Spain, diphtheria is back. We eradicated this disease 30 years ago.
That's right.
But because people aren't vaccinating their children and are destroying herd immunity, we already have one six-year-old in the hospital, eight more in isolation in Barcelona, Spain, because of the anti-vax movement.
Well, you know, I don't know how Wakefield ever thought that he would get away with it. You know, science is absolutely unforgiving of this sort of thing, and I'm glad that they got to him in, well, not quite in time. Actually, he had published the articles and such, and they were in scientific journals,
yep,
only to be withdrawn later on, of course. But by that time, the whole anti-vax movement was in full swing, and it's still active. And this is the thing that the JREF, the James Randi Educational Foundation, is going to fight as much as we possibly can, though it's a little bit off center for the subject of our particular interest.
Yeah, well, you know as well as I do, if you have a splash of a headline on a front page saying that so-and-so is a murderer, and then 3 days later there's a correction on page 14 that says we spelled the name wrong, or it wasn't him, or he wasn't a murderer, no one sees the correction. They all saw the front page. And the problem with the internet is all of this garbage that's been spewed by these anti-vaxxers from Wakefield to McCarthy and on and on and on, that keeps getting spread as if it's true, because no one sees the corrections and the debunking.
Exactly. And I'm very angry about it, and I'm very concerned about it, and I'm glad that you are, too.
Well, that's what brings me back to the question I asked you earlier. Aren't you frustrated about the lack of, or the lessening of faith in evidence-based information?
Well, yes, of course. It's something that is on my mind all the time, Paul, and is renewed constantly, as it is with you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So what we've got to do is we just got to lift our chins a little higher and march off in the dawn and face the day and do the work.
You've traveled so many places. Is the rest of the world as wrong about these things as America seems to be?
Unfortunately, I have to say yes. Now, I just came back from Italy and from Finland, and my audiences, of course, are very receptive of what I've got to say. But then they will come to me with stories that just are heartbreaking about people who have fallen for the preachers, fallen for the anti-vaxxers, they've fallen for the faith healers and such. It makes me a little despondent, but at the same time I have to think, well, I came all the way here. I gave a talk for a very large audience and on television, and I hope that it got across.
Yeah, I hope that the message gets through some thick skulls, and there are many of them. Now, one last thing I've got to ask you about. I have a 21-year-old daughter who you met at TAM a few years ago. I'm proud to say that she is a critical thinker, and there are many young women like her. I would love to see that the skeptical movement expanded to include more of them. And I wonder how we can do that to get more women into the skeptical movement. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I certainly do. And I must tell you that racial minorities and people from other countries around the world will be attending TAM this year, as they do every year. And when I get a counting of hands, how many people from Germany, and you see hands going up all over the place, France, Australia, wow. They come from all over the world to the amazing meeting. That's very encouraging to me because that's my touchstone. That's what gives me the evidence that we are attracting people from literally all over the world and from many different social classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really so satisfying. I get a few tears in my eyes when I see that.
And there have been more women at the meetings in the last few years, right?
Oh, yes, very much. And this is important, too, Paul. Not just women who came because they're with their husbands. No, women who came there, in many cases, and dragged their husbands along. And that's very refreshing, too.
But I know that Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, who are two of our great scientific thinkers in this country, have spent some time thinking about how we can get more girls and young women involved in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And I would like to make it STEMs, put another S on there for skepticism. How do we
yes.
do that?
Oh, yes, indeed. Well, we'll share the last S on there. Yes. But, no, you're absolutely right. And, by the way, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I spent a bit of time with him since the first time I met him at TAM. This is a character and a half.
Yep.
Has he been on your program?
I've never had a chance to have him on the radio, but about 3 weeks ago, he was here in St. Louis and played to a 3,000-person sold-out performance at the Peabody Opera House here in town. 3,000 people showed up essentially to watch a scientific lecture, and he spent, I'm not kidding, Randy, 3 hours on stage talking about science and science education, and it was one of the best nights I've ever had.
Oh, well, I tell you, when I first met Neil deGrasse Tyson, Dr. Tyson, pardon me,
yes.
I was just so excited at his presence, his personality, the charisma that he glows in the dark. That's all there is to it,
yeah.
I swear. And when he walked on the stage at TAM, there was dead silence. They had never quite seen anything as gigantic as this man
yep.
in all his vest, his zodiacal vest, that I particularly admire. And he took that audience by storm.
Yep.
He couldn't get off the stage at the end of it. He couldn't. They wouldn't let him off stage. It was just incredible. He's a great personality. He represents science. And the fact that he is at the Hayden Planetarium, I mean, come on. His office there is cluttered with everything you can imagine. I could go on forever. But Neil deGrasse Tyson is a character and a half. I love him dearly. I hope that he's a good friend of mine. I'm a good friend of his, I can tell you that.
Well, the same can be said about you, and it's been a pleasure talking to you today, as it has been over the more than quarter century that I've known you, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you next month. AmazingMeeting.com is where you can get more information. You can also go to AnHonestLiar.com for the trailer for the biographical documentary about Randy's life, An Honest Liar, and you can also find out more about everything he's involved in by going to the website randy.org. That's the James Randi Educational Foundation website. Randy, thanks so much for joining me here today. I'll see you in a few weeks.
Yes, Paul. Looking forward to it with great enthusiasm. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.